Last night. Were there any peculiarities?
Usual crowd. Regular punters, nothing really.
Well, no strangers.
A few Arabs. It's a good night. Nothing unusual.
Nothing unusual, he says. Eric's been blown to smithereens. Colin's been carved up and I've got a bomb in me casino. And you say nothing unusual?
You know what I mean, Eric.
Okay. Meeting King George V Doc now. He's put out a story the bomb in the car was a gas leak. Buy some time.
Nice one. There was nothing unusual when I was in New York, was there?
No, nothing at all.
Or nothing alien.
All right, everyone, welcome back. We are back now to talk a little more crime drama, British crime drama, that is. We talked about Dead Man's Shoes, quite a pretty effective little outing there for the Shane Meadows and the crew. Doesn't have a lot of replay value for me because it's fucking depressing as hell. But we're going to turn the tables here a bit, and Trevor has now picked a gritty crime drama from 1980, and it is called The Long Good Friday. It's called that because it takes place on Good Friday, and it's a long day.
Yeah, well, yeah, but also as well, I think that there were sort of the long goodbye and all that were sort of tapping into there, so yeah. But I think it had a working title. It was something completely different, but it just escapes me at the moment. But yeah. But it's not just a long day, but it's actually a long weekend. It should have been called the Long Easter Weekend.
But it started on Good Friday with all the, you know, assassinations. Yes. All right, we'll jump into it here. Before I begin, I do got to correct myself on the movie They Live. It's very minor, but I'm a classy guy. I'm very classy, and I admit if a mistake has been made. It's very minor, but out of respect to the writer Ray Harris, the short story that They Live was based from, it was called 3 o'clock in the morning. I call it 3 a.m. in the morning. I know.
Was it not 8 o'clock in the morning? I'm serious.
Is it 8 o'clock in the morning?
Give me a second. I'm going to check this now. Give me a second.
I thought it was 3 o'clock in the morning.
If you just give me a second. I thought it was 8 o'clock in the morning. I don't know.
Quick, double check. Check up Ray Harris, short story, They Live, and they'll pop right up.
Yeah, well, basically, I haven't read the story. I think it might be, if you bear with me, I'm going to check it now. They Live. Or maybe we're both wrong.
That's so funny. I get this wrong. I probably did say 8 a.m., but my notes, I put 3 o'clock. I don't know. So fucking professional.
I'm serious.
Oh my God, dude.
Give me a second.
I'll do it.
Restore it. No. This is important to me. I'll not sleep.
Ray Harris, They Live, short story.
Yeah. See, there's not much coming up.
Ba 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 da, ba 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 ba.
8 o'clock in the morning. Yes, 8 o'clock in the morning. And it's Ray Nelson.
8 o'clock in the morning. Okay, it's 8. Okay, so I'm retracting the retraction.
Ray Nelson, 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, so just give it's 8 o'clock in the morning. I think I said 8 a.m. in the morning or 3. I don't know. Who gives? Either way, I'm correcting it.
I'm correcting the
just
name.
In case. Because, you know, yes, it's you know, it's his work, and he certainly, you know, even though it's something minor, whether an o'clock or an a.m.,
yeah,
still out of respect to the author. All right, let's dive back into The Long Good Friday. Long Good Friday is my first time watching it, so I like watching new stuff. There's a funny story about how they were concerned about Bob Hoskins' accent, and they dubbed him for the American side because they were concerned some Americans wouldn't get his dialogue. And obviously he sued, yada, yada, yada. They decided not to do it. I'm glad they didn't. You know, it's not fair to the actor, of course. But I got to say, I can see where they were coming from. Now, I've lived in the UK now for about, you know, a good 12 years here. And I've never had a problem with accents. I've adapted, I think, quite well. But it's, before anyone watches this, especially if you're stateside, I will say that it's kind of like subtitles with Bob Hoskins. Once you start reading the subtitles, you kind of forget you're reading them. So once you start just getting into the characters, his accent gets clearer and clearer. That makes any sense what I'm saying.
It perfectly, but here's the issue. It's not even so much, I don't think, the accent. There is a lot of Cockney slang used. So if you're not up to speed with Cockney slang, which is basically arguably a different, it's made up sort of slang words for regular words in the English language. So there's a fair bit of Cockney slang going on here too.
That could be it too. But Bob Hoskins in this character, he talks really fast, so all of his words blend. Yes. So that's where the problem, but you kind of start adjusting. Yeah, and you start adapting to it. So the first 10, 15 minutes, is like, I have to turn this off. What is he fucking saying?
Yeah.
What's he saying, fucking me?
Leave it out, you slag.
Yeah. And I was like, he didn't sound anything like this when he was talking to Roger Rabbit.
or when he was Super Mario. Yeah.
Yeah, but trust me, go with it. Everyone else is fine. But for some reason, yeah, his sticks out. But I'm glad they didn't dub it. Like I said, it's not fair to the actor.
They were going to dub it with a Midlands accent, which I suppose is a bit softer, but it wouldn't make any sense in terms of it's set in the East End Docklands. So,
Yeah, but if it's going to a different market outside the UK, maybe that wouldn't matter.
They would get away with it, yeah.
Yeah, but out of respect to the actor, all good. And this is directed by a man called John McKenzie. I just looked him up. He's done a couple stuff I really enjoyed, including a Pierce Brosnan action film called Fourth Protocol, which is kind of a fun movie he did in the late 80s. We'll certainly get to our boy Pierce. And then he did a movie you guys know as Blue Heat. I know it as The Last of the Finest, which I really enjoyed. The Last of the Finest starred a really cool ensemble of character actors, Jeff Fay, hey, Joel Petriano, but it had the great Bill Paxton and Brian Dennehy.
I remember Blue Heat.
Yeah. So
as it was no one here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got, check those both. Those are, quite solid little films there. And he's kind of done his own thing. He's always been working, but never found the success as he did with this Long Good Friday. It's pretty well.
I think he's done a bit of TV as well.
Yeah. But like I said, he's, like a lot of directors in the 80s. We talked about that with Peter Hyams and John Badham. They all still direct, but pretty much in TV now. But, good on him.
This one here was actually originally made for TV. Then I believe it was the BBC got cold feet. I think it was made for the BBC. They got cold feet. They were going to edit it heavily anyway, because of the violence, the scenes of violence. But I think they got cold feet. Lou Grade, or was it Michael Grade, his son? I don't know. But anyway, because of the troubles were raging at the time, because they saw it as glorifying the IRA, which is bollocks, it's not. But so then it was Ringo Starr's, the Beatle, Ringo Starr's handmade films that come in, and they took it on, and it got then a cinema release.
My God, I didn't know that. It's like I said before we started this gritty crime drama. Gritty doesn't necessarily mean violent. It's the mood and the setting and the atmosphere of the film that makes it gritty. Yeah, there's violence in it, but again, it's one of those it's images that you can see being played out in the real world. So that's what gives that gritty rawness. Doesn't necessarily you're going to see a man's head exploding, because this movie is more for the grittiness, more of the way the swearing and the characters and the unlikability of a lot of these characters and it's rather than the violence. The violence is quite tame in this.
I would say as well that, although when the violence does happen, it does pack quite a punch, but I would say as well that a big part of the grittiness of this film would be, it's obviously heavily inspired by real life East End gangsters from the 60s and stuff, likes of the Cray twins, Mad Frankie Fraser, people like that. In fact, the Cray twins there, sort of basically crime business, was known as the firm. Here, they're called, what is it they're called? It's something very like the firm. It's not the business, but it's but the company or something. But it's obviously a take on their the firm.
Yeah, I mean, like it's everything comes from something when it comes to a creepy crime drama. We talked about that with the French Connection, based on the real life of Popeye Doyle, the Warriors based on real life gangs in the New York during the 70s. I mean, that's kind of where the gritty crime drama really is. Okay, so we'll jump into this here. We've got Harold, Victoria, Colin, Phil, Jeff Razors, Harris, Carol, and he's credited as the first Irishman, who's played by a very young Pierce Brosnan.
Yes.
Bob Hoskins, a very young Helen Mirren, Paul Freeman, Belloc, Alan Ford. It's so funny. You see Alan Ford. Now, anyone stateside you or anyone outside the U.K., you would know Alan Ford if you saw his face. Over here in the UK, he's kind of a household name. It's funny because he has like a one-off line here and he's in the background in some of the scenes. But if you know Alan Ford over here, he is like, anytime you see his face, you think head mobster guy.
Yeah, it's he's the go-to East End Cockney gangster for the last 20 or 30 years, you know, well, probably longer. But yeah, he's also an American Werewolf in London.
Yeah,
that very small role.
Yeah, he's in that. And then you had, I know him from, I started Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrel. Guy Ritchie uses him a lot.
Yeah, he's in Snatch, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Bricktop.
So you have a lot of young cast in here of all up-and-comers, including Dexter Fletcher, which is funny as hell cameo. We'll get into that one. So we open up, we have this music, and I think it's hilarious. The music's so... It's like it's almost like if the band Goblin, Dario Argento's
but
Goblin.
For gangster films?
It is. It sounds like Goblin mixed with disco music.
Yeah. Yeah. Very late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah. That transition where they didn't know where music was going. It was so bad. But it was catchy. I was into it. There's some editing issues in the beginning here. I don't know. I'm sure you might have caught this. You have this whole opening sequence, about 9 minutes long, and you have a house.
Yes.
And then you have people in the house, and they're talking, shooting the shit. And then you have, we see Belloc. Colin.
From Raiders.
His name's Colin, but I'm going to call him Belloc. You know what's just going to happen. And he's got a briefcase. The briefcase gets delivered back to the house that we quickly get to. Then Belloc goes to a gay bar to hit on men. And then those men get killed. And the bodies are dumped in front of the house, which is where the money was dropped off, because they're going to take that money from them.
It's quite a confusing opening.
Yeah, I was fucking lost.
Especially the first time you watch it. Yeah, it does sort of make sense later on whenever it's all explained what Colin was up to, along with, spoiler, Jeff and Councillor Harris. But when you're just like sort of watching this for the first time, you're going, what the hell's going on here?
Okay, well, let's dive into it. I mean, people who listen have seen it. So,
yeah.
This is the story here. So, Harris,
yes,
the lawyer, ended
up. No, he's a councillor.
The councillor. Lawyer.
Yes. No. Councillor means he's a politician, basically.
Oh, okay. Okay, the politician hires Jeff to take the money to the IRA and then take it back?
No, what it is...
I'm confused.
Councillor Harris controls a lot of, you know, basically stuff around East End of London and stuff, along with Harold, you know, Bob Hoskins' character. Yeah. But on the building, along with building sites and companies and stuff... But the Irish builders, which there's a big Irish community, you know, over in London, and there was at the time, the Irish builders are talking about going on strike. So Councillor Harris, I think this is right, wants to get the IRA to basically come over and put the shits up the Irish builders so that they don't strike. There's money involved, and Colin skims the money. So he does, and it pisses the IRA off. Also, Jeff is involved. Jeff went to war with Colin, and the IRA are of the opinion that basically this isn't just Jeff and Colin, which it was. This is also Bob Hoskins and his firm, you know, his company, for want of a better term, his criminal company. So they're basically out for revenge.
All right, so let me get this straight. So Harris tells him, give them the money so we can get them to come over here and work, you know, the Irish workers, whatever, right?
Yes, stop the rolling strike.
Colin and Jeff drop off the money. This is the opening scene here. So Colin and Jeff drop off the money to the IRA. Colin goes deliberately to try to pick up two gay men, get them out of the bar, has them kidnapped and then killed, and dropped in front of the farmhouse. Why?
As far as I'm aware, the gay man, the young gay man, and you know the other ones in the bar, the IRA mistook them for basically cronies of Bob Hoskins and Colin and stuff. As far as I know, they're basically killed in the crossfire. They were basically falsely believed to be part of Bob Hoskins' sort of criminal empire.
But why kill them?
But they weren't.
I don't understand this.
Because they're brutal. Because they're fucking ruthless.
No. Who? Okay, so Jeff and Colin had those men killed.
No, the IRA killed them, believing that they were associates, criminal associates of Jeff and Colin and Bob Hoskins, Harold.
Okay, so this okay. So,
do you know what I mean?
But you understand what I'm saying. This whole editing is very choppy.
It is confusion.
So when the money gets dropped off at the IRA's house and they're both, and then we see the guns
That's
pop
Belfast.
Up through the windows. Yeah.
Yes.
So is that Jeff and Colin robbing the money back? And then
they're stealing the money,
Yeah, they give the money, then they take it back. It's kind of really confusing here. Then they go to the gay bar to set up two men, because when they walk out in front of...
They're not setting them up. Colin's just looking to basically have a fun time.
Oh, so he is looking to hook up. He's not trying to set these men up.
Yes, no. Colin was just looking to rip the IRA off. Whenever he's in the bar and he's looking to pick up that guy, and he does pick him up, he's just basically looking to shag.
So he's from the two gay guys are friendly fire.
Yes, exactly.
Because they were associated with Colin that night.
Yes, and the IRA ones thought that they were part of the criminal underworld of the East End, controlled by Harold.
Okay. All right. Well,
yeah.
Guys, just go ahead and watch it. Trust me, the questions I'm asking do make sense.
As far as my understanding, that is correct.
Okay. You know? All right. It does have that kind of feel where, what the fuck? Like when we see Carol at the funeral, she's driving a funeral procession. She gets out and spits on Jeff. You have no idea what the fuck that means. Until
later on. Because her husband was killed by the IRA in retaliation for them ripping off the money.
Yes, and he was just a perp innocent driver. He did nothing wrong.
Yes, exactly. He was the getaway driver.
Okay. We'll kind of finalize that all we just talked about, guys, in the last minute of the podcast. Fucking hell. All right, so Harold. Is Harold an actor? So I take it Harold's a guy trying to become clean. He's trying to go straight.
No. Harold's story is basically he's a bad bastard. But for the last 10 years, through ruthless means, he has brought peace throughout London and the underworld. You know, but he rules with an iron fist. You know, because he runs a show, basically. But he has also meant that there's no shit. Nobody gives him shit. But also that's why the cops are also more than happy to go along with him, because he is basically making their lives a lot easier. He runs London.
Yeah, basically. There's a lot of inconsistency with Harold. And the problem...
As a character.
Yes. What I mean is he seems very professional and blah, blah, blah. And then he'll turn on a dime. But he won't turn on... He seems kind of like a pussy when it comes to people outside of his circle. But he'll slap Jeff around. He slaps the cop around. He'll easily pick on them. But when it comes to anybody he doesn't really know, he kind of cowards down a bit. So I didn't understand if he's really a bad guy, or I'm confused here.
I think he's an old school East End gangster, because I mean there's certain, it's a bit on the nose actually. You know, whenever he sees the kids and all in the street, and you know, this is like a who's who, by the way, this is like a who's who of British character actors.
Yes, we know. Yeah.
There's so many of them. But anyway, there's a lot of things where he says, you know, this used to be a nice neighborhood and stuff. So he's old school, like the craze, apparently, you know, where it's old school, you know, like, you know, look after your own and respect your neighborhood and respect your elders and stuff. It's all this here. And, you know, Okay. It's basically nostalgia for a time that didn't exist. You know, people looked after each other. It's a working class thing.
Yeah.
So it is.
Okay.
You know.
So Colin once Pierce Brosnan shows up in his little tight little speedos, and then we have Fat Burt Reynolds. The guy looks just like a fat Burt Reynolds. I call him Chubby Burt Reynolds. He is Pierce Brosnan and Chubby Burt Reynolds are the two Irish hitmen.
That's the IRA man.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you got Pierce, who's like, they're at the pool. He's like, I don't know who Pierce is yet. And I was like, I'm not watching James Bond and Belloc. I can't. No disrespect to you, whatever lifestyle you want to live. I'm not watching Belloc and James Bond hit it in the shower. Luckily, it's a setup. They kill Belloc.
Yeah. Well, he gets cut. So, in the swimming pool showers.
Pretty quick. Yes. Pretty much a cameo. He probably had to leave because he was doing Raiders.
That's it. He was too busy. Yeah, he was too busy being a Frenchman who was trying to double cross Indiana Jones instead of the IRA.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
He fucked over the IRA and he fucked over Indiana Jones.
Well, he tried to fuck over James Bond, but James Bond was having none of it.
He's so young.
I know.
But guys, watch it when Pierce is kind of trying to put on the moves to Belloc as Belloc's swimming. And I say his name's Colin, not to confuse people, but who gives a fuck? But you'll see Chubby Burt Reynolds just leaning down, watching all this go down. And I started laughing. It's so funny. You got to check it out. Chubby Burt Reynolds.
Yes.
But these two guys.
Bomb goes off as well.
What was that?
There's a bomb goes off as well in a separate incident.
Yes. Well, we're not there yet, but since you brought it up. Wow, Trevor.
I'm just keeping you right. 8 o'clock in the morning.
So, fuck off. I retract the retraction. So, yeah. Some innocent bastard, Eric, gets blown up during Good Friday Mass, hence the title. Because this is when these assassinations start happening on Good Friday. And it was meant for Harold's mom.
Yes. No, I think it was meant for Harold.
I think it was meant for Harold himself.
Was
it?
Again, it's not fully explained, but I was of the belief that it was for Harold himself. But he just, he arranges for the driver to take his old mom back to the church, for Mass.
Yeah.
I think there's the dialogue by Bob Hoskins. I think it was meant for Bob Hoskins, as was the later bomb in the bar.
In the bar, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like Parky. He's a pretty good character. He's the cop. He kind of gives them little tidbits.
Yeah. Yes. But it's very much that, by the way, Bob Hoskins is fantastic in this. He's really believable as that type of sort of, basically thug.
Yeah, but
with delusions of being a businessman,
I think the problem I have with the character is what I said. It's too inconsistent and sloppy with, he seems like a pretty good guy, and then he's sloppy, and then he's got emotions all over the place. And so I didn't know where to go with him. I didn't know if I wanted to like him or not.
That's the genius of it, because he's like a fully rounded sort of human character where you are conflicted, because at one point he is sort of like good to his friends and all, all this here, and he is charismatic like so many of these big gangsters are, but then other times he's like you see his human frailties, it's very well written and performed by Hoskins, he feels like a real fucking proper East End gangster.
Okay.
But also a human character.
It plays a lot like Scorsese's early work, Mean Streets.
Yeah.
It does have more of a British version of Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Where you get to know this small little cluster of gangsters.
Yes.
And you kind of like them. I liked his men. Him, I'm still, I mean, during this whole chaos, he's trying to merge with these two businessmen from the States.
Who are mafia?
Who are a lot wiser than he thinks. Because it does show up.
Yep, totally.
And you have Victoria, who's pretty much probably smarter, to be honest, than Harold is.
I was just about to say that. He's probably the smartest character out of them all, out of his whole sort of criminal underworld gang. Because she's the one that susses out Jeff as well.
Yeah, yeah. That Jeff character was weird, but he was good in it.
Yeah.
The scene where I was confused because I thought there was an affair going on between Victoria and Jeff. Because as you know, when Jeff walks into the to the penthouse, he makes the comment, "I want to lick your body all over."
I want to lick you all over. Well, yeah, that's foreshadowing that Jeff's loyalty or lack of to Harold. I would say as well, Derek Thompson, who plays Jeff, that was his first film role. He went to primary school with my own mother. He's now obviously very well known for the British soap set on a hospital Casualty. But yeah, he's from just down the road from me originally. So there you go. There's a bit of useless information for you.
There you go. If anyone gets anything from this, that's what you take. So
good actor.
He's good in this for his first role. Now, when he tells Parky, "I need to know what's going on here. I got confused here." Parky gives him a name, which is his informant, and the informant knows everything. So, but he wants, Parky wants, he goes, "I trust my guy. I'll ask him." He goes, "No, you'll tell me who's your informant, and I'll give you a percentage of the sale, whatever."
Yeah.
And we find out that's Errol, who and who's Horace from Full Monty.
Yeah, and also he played Denzel for many years in the classic British sitcom Only Fools and Horses.
Okay, yeah, I just recognize. I know that voice, and then you see him in Full Monty. He's the old dude, older guy.
The Scouser voice, yeah. He's obviously much younger than this, but you know.
So he cuts him quite a. So let me ask you this:
Yes,
you've got Razor who's got to cut down his face, right?
And then wait, Razor's the actor replace him.
Well, let me finish. So you got Razor's who's cut. Who he shows Enro all of his cuts, and he's got a razor face. You know, he's got that blade in his face. You know, he's got the scar. I can't say the fucking word scar.
He's basically a Bond villain.
Yeah, he's good. I actually like Razors.
Well, the actor who plays him is Harry the Hatchet in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yeah, these guys all seem to work together, don't they? They all full circle. Yeah.
Very small pool of actors.
My point is, when he shows him all the wounds and then on his face, well, you can't miss the one on his face right there. Before he cuts Errol.
Yes.
Did Bob Hoskins do that to Razor's?
No, that's just, it's not explained, but it's just more, I think that's from a previous on-scene sort of skirmish, perhaps 10 years before, whenever they were, before they had peace in the East End gangland, you know?
Okay.
So that's just a previous scar because he's a bad bastard.
All right. So he's been razored before. That's why it's called Razors.
Yeah.
He's been cut up. So he does that to other people now.
Yes. Well, it's, I think he would do it anyway because he's like bad bastard henchman. He's an evil bastard, but you know, you wouldn't fuck with him. But basically, no, I think they were from previous skirmishes. You know, I think he's very loyal and it's proved in this that he's very loyal to Harold.
When you talked about after the try to get information from Errol, who doesn't know anything.
Yes.
He's so young, Dexter Flexner. He's one of the kids, and he gives him some money for watching the car. And he ended up directing, you know, Rocket Man and directing, ghost-directed Bohemian Rhapsody. And he's also an actor, obviously. So he's very so well young, but he still looks the same.
I know. He was quite a well-known child actor. I mean, not just for this, but for other things. But then he was in a kids show, a British kids show called Press Gang and stuff. And then he sort of made the transformation to being an adult actor where, you know, he starred in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and the like.
Yeah, I mean, I recognize him as an actor for it. I know he didn't do direct until later in his life, obviously.
I didn't know he was a director until I was looking into this.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. He was nominated for Rocket Man, and he pretty much once Bryan Singer stepped away from the industry because of his troubles, his naughty time, he took over and directed Bohemian Rhapsody.
Well, I didn't know that. Yeah.
So I do think it's, I don't know if it's meant to be funny, but with all this chaos going on, Victoria is trying to keep the peace so these two Americans don't see what's going on. And they go, man, we're going to bring you to this great fucking blah, blah, blah. You're going to love the food. And then it blows up as they get there. I will have to admit, really bad timing for the IRA here. They keep missing. They're really missing the boat in these kills here.
Yeah. So, indeed.
When it blows up, It was a gas leak. And the two Americans are like, oh, okay. Well, I knew. When Victoria takes him aside, he goes, listen, I'll bring you to another restaurant. And the minute they get her alone, the two Americans going, we're not fucking stupid. What the fuck's going on here?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And Councillor Harris is there. He's on the drink and he's behaving. But then you sort of start to find clues that there's something going on between him and Jeff, which obviously there is.
But let me ask you this then.
Uh-huh.
The whole time you think Harris is the douche, but he's not, because he was there to help to do what he was supposed to do. It was Jeff and Colin that did the stealing, not Harris.
Yes. Yes, Harris was a bit of a douche because he sort of did it, arranged it all behind Harold's back. But the real douches, the real bastards, as Councillor Harris says himself, were Jeff and Colin.
Yes, okay, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But you know, the only bad thing is Harris went behind, but Harris meant well.
Yes, yes, he wasn't like... the reason for all of this happening is because of Jeff and Colin. And their greed and their sort of their betrayal of Harold.
Okay. And then Parkey is the one who, then after all the stuff goes down, the Americans have made this ends in 24 hours or we leave.
Yes. Yes.
Parkey finally comes to Harold and tells him these aren't the guys. He was going to torture some guys. And they said, nah, this isn't them. There's a couple special guys, a special branch for the IRA that did this.
Yes, that's the guys that they get in the abattoir and hang upside down.
Yeah, but those guys weren't the ones who did it.
No, they weren't. No.
They were going to try to get something out of them, but Parkey shows up and says, no, we found a bomb that didn't go off, and this bomb is made by a special branch of the IRA. And that's how they kind of know it wasn't these guys.
And also with Jeff here as well, with the abattoir scene, Jeff, and he's obviously acting, he pretends to go psycho to like get information out of the guys hanging upside down, and they're like trying to calm him. Goes, what's the matter with you, Jeff? You know, calm it down, and I'll fucking leave it out, you fucking slag. But that's when you know Jeff's only trying to cover for himself, so he is for something, which we don't quite find out till later on.
There's a nice scene with Helen Mirren and Victoria there, because she's cool cat through this whole fucking thing.
Oh yeah,
and then she finally breaks down.
Yes,
it's actually a really good scene for her character because she's been so calm and chilled. And when they're up in their pet house, she finally says, "This is she's scared."
Yes,
you know, we'll see that scare her reaction at the very, very end. It's kind of creepy actually if you pause it. But
she's quite posh compared to the rest of them. She would be upper middle class type.
Yeah.
You know, they'd even say that she's friends with Princess Anne and stuff, you know, and she played hockey or lacrosse with her or something like that at the beginning.
Who was the guy that was crucified?
The guy he was some Irish informant guy, I think. And I believe that was Jeff and stuff did that to him to shut him up before he spilled the beans on them. But it's not fully explained.
You had me. See, there's some sloppy here. The beginning, bad, some rough editing, but you kind of get it once you get the pieces together. But with this scene, when the guy's nailed to the floor, still alive.
Yeah.
But we should have been introduced to this guy.
The thing is, all of it, this is pretty tight, the script, but you have to pay super duper attention to every single piece of dialogue. And if you're not from the East End of London, you have to really listen carefully, you know, because those accents and all of the Cockney slang and stuff. So, yeah, but as far as I can gather, again, this sort of confused me as well, but as far as I can gather, he was an Irish guy. That the reference earlier, and they basically, I believe it was Jeff got that done to him to basically shut him up so that he didn't spill the beans about Jeff to Harold.
Okay. I never saw that. I was confused as hell on that whole thing. But then we see, this is where things come full circle. We finally meet the woman who spat on Jeff. We kind of didn't know what was going on there.
Yes.
Well, she's at the gravestone of her husband who was killed, who was just the innocent driver who Jeff hired to bring Colin to the money drop or whatever it was in Belfast.
Yes.
And again, inconsistency, but you might be right. It might be one of this old boys take care of their own, because he says, I'll take care of you. I'll give you
the that's 100%.
I'll give you £100 a week. What else do you need? Let's get you a better headstone. He actually feels sorry. He does feel sorry for this person. That's right.
You know, it's that old school, because apparently the Krays, when they were alive, the Kray twins were quite popular in their own community because they looked after their own community and stuff. So this is a play on that, where you look after your own, the working class people of the East End, and sort of you keep your own sort of people right and stuff. And you know, there's constant references to this throughout the film, but this is one of them where he says, I'll keep you right. So there's that, it's that, this whole sort of loyalty amongst thieves, you know, type thing. There's a certain loyalty amongst the underworld. I mean, they're bad bastards at the same time, but there's that certain sort of unwritten rules where you look after your dear old mom and, you know, stuff like that. So yes, that ties in with that, where he's speaking to her and saying, I'll keep you right. You know, I'll pay you £100 a week or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. He's trying to almost play the Polly character. Paul Sorvino played in Goodfellas, where he's kind of the head dude, very likable. Yeah, he's professional, but don't fuck with him.
Yes, exactly, 100%.
So maybe that's what he was trying to do. I don't.
Yes, that's what it was.
I just think Paul Sorvino would do it better.
Yeah,
but
Paul Hoskins came first.
I know, but okay, Paul Sorvino did it better. I don't know. I wasn't intimidated by this guy. And
you know what the problem is, I think?
And you should be.
You know what the problem is? Bob Hoskins' height, or lack of it.
He's too small. No, because you can have that Napoleon. Look at Joe Pesci.
You know, well, yes, I know. But I think, you know who would be much more intimidating and would terrify me more? Razors, the henchman.
Yeah, Razors.
Yeah.
He'd be pretty good.
He's the real bad bastard, like. Yeah.
Or an older version of Alan Ford, who's in this.
yeah. Well, Alan Ford, I can't take that. Well, Alan Ford. See, Alan Ford has appeared in, like, Knowing Me, Knowing You. It was an Alan Partridge sort of spoof chat show playing. It's like a comedy sketch where he's sort of camped up almost the whole sort of Cockney geezer, you know. Because, you know, in Snatch, he's Bricktop, which is like a funny character. So, but yeah. No, thanks. So turkeys are fucking sweet enough, you know, in Snatch. So, yeah.
I do like when Harold finally loses it, because he loves Jeff. Jeff's obviously, yes. You can tell the whole film is his go-to. But he realizes Jeff's the one who's fucked him. He caused this. Not even Harris at this point. He obviously stabs him in the throat by accident.
He loses it. He's just completely by accident. Yeah.
And actually, it's the most gruesome death.
It's brilliantly played by both actors, but especially Hoskins.
Yeah, because he finally loses it, and Victoria and Razors have got to take care of him.
Yeah,
to get him.
Then the funky 80s, late 70s music when he's in the shower, realizing what he's done, and they're burning his clothes. You know,
the goblins are back.
Goblins back with the same theme. Yeah.
I do. My favorite scene is coming up, and it's the derby scene when they're going to meet the IRA. Who they stole from. It was funny. There is a funny line where he goes, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah, how much was it? 5,000. This is all happening for 5,000 fucking pounds?
Yeah, I know he says. What the? Yeah. But I think there was a bit more, and there was a bit more betrayal going on there. Again, it's quite, there's a lot going on in the script, you know? But it was more about controlling the region. They were basically looking to step in on Harold's ground, the IRA ones. They were looking to control London, not him. You know, take it from him, basically. Well,
here's the problem I had. I didn't really get that. And the problem I had, even though the derby scene is fucking brutal and awesome, I do love the guys. Hey, well, where's the head IRA, the IRA guy? He's like, he's in this car. He just got done winning a derby race.
He's a stock car, we call it over. Stock car racing, we would call it here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he's a stock car racer as well. It's just like, and then there's a random IRA sniper in the background watching over them with a gun.
This is where I'm confused here. So they're going to pay him 60 grand instead of the $5,000. I know it was a setup. I saw the film.
Yes, I know.
Jesus, come on, man. So they're setting the IRA up.
Yes, yes.
And the IRA are setting them up. Well, I don't think they're setting up. I think the sniper's just there to protect his boss.
Yes, 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 exactly.
But then we see the doors kick open and they blow the shit out of the two IRA men.
Like razors and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and they fall and get run over by cars. It's pretty awesome. But here's why. Yeah. Here's what's stupid. This movie is kind of playing it smart pretty well, you know? It's a who's who. It's a murder mystery almost, you know?
Yes, it is.
It's got Goodfellas. Yeah. It's got Scorsese qualities, mm-hmm. Coppola qualities, a little Agatha Christie thrown in there. It's working for me. But this is where it kind of loses its footing a bit. How the fuck was he going to get out of this? You just killed a main man of the IRA and his boy. How do they think they were not going to get killed?
I think they were there to basically put the fear up the IRA to kill their main man, which they do. By the way, did you notice Councillor Harris also gets shot in the crossfire by razors and stuff?
That's nothing. It was a little too fast.
Yeah, it does a lot. Well, the violence does happen here. It happens very quick.
Yeah.
It's extreme, but it happens very quickly.
Yeah.
But, yes, basically, they were going to war, but with the IRA, well, arguably the IRA had went to war with them first, although you could say it was because of Colin and, what do you call it, on JF, you know, their lack of loyalty and basically
greed. Agreed.
Yeah.
But
essentially, this is Bob Hoskins as Harold's efforts of getting in and putting the fear up the IRA by saying, do not fuck with me. Because he'd been doing this his whole life up to then with anyone, including those boys on the other side, and the ones he hangs upside down in the abattoir. So this is how he deals and how he had
up
to this point, dealing with any rivals.
I think it was stupid. I think if they played with the 60K, they would have got away with it.
Well, but then the IRA would have controlled their patch.
Who knows?
In fact, the entire patch. Yeah.
Well, they don't get away with it. Because I do like the little, they get in the cab, and there it is. James Bond and chubby Burt Reynolds.
Yeah. They're back from this. They've right off. They've tiled themselves off.
There's a nice shot, which I brought up earlier, with Helen Mirren, when her car is passing his car. And she's just got into a cab with the IRA in there. She didn't know was the IRA.
Yeah.
And you can see her screaming for help.
And also, apparently, now it's very, apparently, in one apparently you'd literally blink and you'll miss it. And I missed it, but I was just reading up on it. Apparently, also in that shot, if you like zoom in really closely, Razors has been shot in the head dead as well. You know, whenever she's in the car, like screaming and going, oh, help me, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah, because he's kind of a protector, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you see Bob Hoskins, and it's like a minute, 2 minutes long of him in the back seat, just with Pierce Brosnan with Goblin back, and then Pierce Brosnan just looking at him, smiling with the silencer, and you see Bob Hoskins like, fuck me,
he knows he's screwed,
but
that's brilliantly played, Bam.
Yeah, but he was screwed. You just don't.
Oh yeah, of course he was.
His arrogance got the best of him.
Yeah,
you weren't gonna fuck with these guys.
It's an old story, rise and fall of a gangster. But you know, it's at times confusingly written, but still brilliantly written. If you know, but I think especially by Hoskins, brilliantly performed.
All right,
you know,
is this one of your classic? Is this one of your favorites then?
I don't know. I don't know if it would be one of my favorites, but out of the whole sort of subgenre of British gangster films, I would consider it as one of the best.
Okay.
You know, definitely. And it's obviously inspired the likes of Guy Ritchie with Lock, Stock and, you know, Snatch and other ones like that. But it would certainly be one of the best, if not the best, British sort of crime gangster thriller.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think, as an American?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I like all the little subgenres blended in there, gangster, mystery, and all that stuff. And
yeah,
every actor in it's funny because you recognize them as they're so young, and it's kind of fun, you know, seeing a young Helen Mirren and see Bob Hoskins outside talking to a rabbit. And but you know,
Belloc not harassing Indiana Jones,
Belloc trying
it on with James Bond,
yeah, trying to get it on with 007. Oh, 00. but yeah, I was entertained. I enjoyed it. I don't think I like better crime dramas. Gangster Number One, I think, is better. So I think Roddy McDowell's in that one. And I like all the Guy Ritchie stuff. The Gentleman is such a fucking great film.
Guy Ritchie's are more stylized as opposed to...
I don't think they're stylized when it comes to his older... His new stuff, I'd give you yes on that. But I think Snatch and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels are pretty...
Well, they're sort of almost Tarantino sort of as well.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, more of a Reservoir Dogs feel to them.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, no, it was good. I recommend it. I'd watch it again. It's something I would revisit easily. So it was a fun watch. Everything works. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so there you go, guys. So there you go. What we got? We got The Long Good Friday, which was Gets a Pass, and we watched Ability. We got Dead Man's Shoes, which you recommended as well.
Yep.
Gets a Pass, but there's no rewatchability. A, just because I don't know how people can sit back and watch that over and over again. I mean, that's just some sick shit. And then you got The Wicker Man, which is utter shit. So
bird shit.
You've got two
three
passes.
Classics I picked.
You've got two passes and one pile of shit in the corner.
No, but three classics I picked of British cinema.
Yeah.
The Wicker Man, Dead Man's Shoes, and The Long Good Friday.
We've decided we're going to go something more deeper and thought-provoking now.
We're going art house, aren't we?
We're going to go art house. Yes, right. Citizen Frame's going art house cinema as we talk the Roadhouse trilogy. We're going to be talking Roadhouse. And yes, there's a sequel called Roadhouse Last Call.
There you go.
And then the new Roadhouse, which is actually getting decent reviews, but it's either you like it or you fucking hate it.
Apparently, I haven't seen it yet, but I do know that Conor McGregor's performance in it has been getting rave reviews for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I've seen it. But it'll be fun. So we're going to be doing the Roadhouse trilogy.
Yeah. Classy stuff.
We'll throw another one in there because these three are going to be very easy to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool. Thanks, Trevor, for picking some of those. It's nice being introduced to a new film, Long Good Friday. I've known about it. I've seen it. Yeah. It just got released on 4K. It was a big release. So I might own it. I might put it in my collection.
Could.
So it's definitely, Dead Man's Shoes is always, you know, solid little filmmaking.
Oh, yeah.
All right, guys. Give us a shout on CitizenFrame_podcast on Instagram and, of course, Facebook. The new issue of Phantasmagoria Hellraiser Edition is out now, available on Amazon worldwide, locally in Belfast here in Forbidden Planet, and a series of different stores in the United States.
Yep. Our Hellraiser special.
Yappers, we got some cool things coming up when it comes to people involved with Hellraiser and stuff. So,
oh yes,
guys, hold on, we got some treats. We got some treats.
Watch this space.
So we'll just give you some sweet sweet Roadhouse
until just to whet your appetites.
Just until we figure out what we're gonna do next.
Yeah.
All right, guys, take care of yourselves. Thanks for listening. Have a good one.